The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 10 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Time to return to the January 2021 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. A theme this month is the snows of Appalachia, plus hidden treasures at NC universities, and a little thing up in the corner says Beyond Barbecue in Lexington. I guess that's a special feature. We are going to start with Tales from the Archives. That's the name of the article under the little moniker On Campus. And it says, Shaw University in Raleigh set the template for historically black colleges and universities across the South and helped establish the nation's largest HBCU. That's historically black colleges and universities, if you don't recognize that acronym, North Carolina A&T State University, and this is written by Latria Graham. It's an unusual sight for an early afternoon on the streets of Raleigh. A young woman in a mustard-colored dress walks the perimeter of the Shaw University campus, a tall crown atop her head, and a garnet and white sash across her chest. The stones in her headwear grab and scatter the light, catching the attention of passerbys who pull out their cell phones to snap a quick picture. Drivers along East South Street idle for a moment to take in this brief scene of pageantry before continuing toward the intersection. Beyonce, now there's no accent on the last E in this, but I'm going to guess maybe it's pronounced Beyonce, even so. So we'll call her Beyonce. Wilburn is Miss Shaw, the campus queen. Her role for the academic year is to contribute to several philanthropic and educational endeavors meant to carry forward the university's long-standing tradition of serving the community on campus as well as in Raleigh at large. It's a challenge to fulfill her duties during an unusual year when students can't gather in large numbers, but she's bolstered by her love of her school. Wilburn hails from Los Angeles, and she came to North Carolina specifically to attend Shaw University. Shaw took a chance on me, so I took a chance on Shaw, she says. In high school, Wilburn didn't believe she would attend a four-year university, and then she heard from Shaw. I didn't have enough courage in myself, she says. If they hadn't invested in me, I wouldn't have made it this far. Now that she's a senior and has spent most of her 4 years here, or rather almost 4 years here, she's fallen in love with the region. The fact that you can get up and say good morning to people, and they genuinely say it back, is like, and she pauses, then continues enthusiastically, wow, I've only seen that on TV. She laughs, adding, and the air is fresh. I come in from so much smog. Her story is not unusual. Many in Wilburn's court came to this famed institution, known as an HBCU for historically black colleges and universities, because it represents excellence and opportunity. Others came for Shaw's history. When I was looking at my options, says student body president Ian Finley, I liked the diverse background of Shaw and the role it played in history in helping black folks get an education back in the days of slavery. Shaw is the oldest HBCU in the South. We opened in 1865. All the people who founded this place and why they did it connected with me. The campus bell chimes, signaling the end of their celebration of school pride, and with that, Miss Shaw and her court make their way back to the dormitories to take off their regalia and transform back into students, just in time for class. Across the bridge spanning South Blunt Street, away from the main residence halls where the students now stay, sits the James E. Cheek Learning Resource Center. The building is named for the 1955 Shaw graduate who became the 13th president of Howard University in Washington, D.C. Inside this library's illustrious walls, archivists from the university and community work to catalog all that has been collected during the institution's existence. Director of Library Services Larry Treadwell, Library Specialist Velma Williams, Library Assistant Alexei Sprague, and Dr. Paul Baker, who now serves as Director of the University Galleries at North Carolina Agricultural and Technical State University, ANT, have all spent time on this campus working to document the school's holdings. Originally called the Raleigh Institute, Shaw was founded by Henry Martin Tupper. Not much is known about him, but historians do know that Tupper served as a Union Army soldier during the Civil War. A minister, he was injured in the Battle of Jackson, Mississippi. He promised God that if he survived, he would spend his life educating freed men. After the war, Tupper made his way to Raleigh with his wife, Sarah Baker Leonard, and began teaching literacy and Bible study classes to black men in December 1865. The institution he started was the first black college in the region. It would later become the first college of any kind in the nation to offer a four-year medical program and the first HBCU to admit women into degree-granting programs. In the beginning, classes were held in sharecroppers' cabins. Students contributed to the school's construction by crafting the bricks that would be used to build new classrooms. Several bricks from one of the oldest buildings, Shaw Hall, sit in a slate-gray box in the archives wrapped in muslin, a testament to what those seeking knowledge were willing to do to craft better futures for themselves. Preserving Shaw University's history is only one part of the archivist's mission. Another is to transmit what they know to students to help them shape their educational inquiries and to inspire them as they forge down their own paths. One path that many Shaw alumni have chosen over the school's more than 150 years is the pursuit of civil rights. They have had a history of social activism on campus. That is one of Shaw's legacies, Treadwell says. From its earliest years, the campus has been at the center of political mobilization and civic activism in the region. Among Shaw's best-known alumni is the state activist Ella Baker, who graduated as class valedictorian in 1927. After leaving Raleigh, Baker worked as a field secretary and later a branch director for the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, NAACP. In 1957, she served as associate director of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. Baker returned to Shaw in 1960 to found one of the era's major civil rights organizations, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, later known as SNCC. She was pivotal in creating grassroots campaigns throughout the South, teaching citizens how to advocate for themselves to achieve change rather than depending on just one powerful figurehead. We like to say that Ella had her protesting chops sharpened here at Shaw, Williams says. Her first protest was that she didn't want all women to have to wear cotton stockings, and she led a protest. The president actually kicked her out of the school, but the dean of women stepped in, and she was allowed to graduate. Over the years, Shaw's archives have served other students who would become leaders. Gospel legend Shirley Caesar attended Shaw, as did Congressman Adam Clayton Powell, Jr. Many alumni went on to establish or preside over other HBCUs. the founder of North Carolina Central University, and the first presidents of Elizabeth City State and A&T universities, all were Shaw graduates. North Carolina A&T State University began on Shaw's campus in 1891 as the Agricultural and Mechanical College, but the school grew and eventually moved west to Greensboro, where it is now the nation's largest HBCU. There, on the tree-lined campus, streets of the campus today, school is in session. In between classes, the swoosh of the swinging glass doors of the Dudley Building indicates that another curious student has arrived to take in a bit of its gallery's curated art and history. Today's exhibit is Jean Mautusami Ashes, Dalfusky Island, a photographic essay. Mautusami Ash spent time on the South Carolina island to capture the folkways of the Gullah Geechee, descendants of enslaved people from Africa. When she saw that their culture was changing due to technology and interactions with the outside world, she decided to preserve what she could before the old ways vanished. Her exhibit shows that historians and artists share a common enemy, time. The libraries and galleries at North Carolina's HBCUs show students that their racial legacies stretch far beyond our state lines. Black art and culture matter, says Dr. Baker, director of A&T's galleries and professor of history. Just by experiencing all that these places have to offer, you can see that the talent that grows out of these communities, particularly ones that have gone through so much, like the African diaspora have, then you can appreciate that expression. It humanizes a population. Back at Shaw, Alexi Sprague heads down the hall to the library's archival back room. The air is thick with a heady scent of old paper and ink. When she opens Shaw's yearbooks, they smell almost almond-like. Sprague says that she often picks up an archival box and thinks, what's in this one? How can we tell students the story of what's in here? Some of the things she's pored over this year include scrapbooks from alumni documenting their time at the college and Christmas cards that students long ago sent to one another, snapshots of collegiate life that are rarely documented, let alone seen by the public. The stories in the archives and galleries at both Shaw and A&T, two HBCUs that grew together, are tales of struggle and triumph, of opportunity and a dedication to equal rights for all citizens. They are reminders of the major roles that these institutions have played in the development and direction not only of North Carolina, but also of our country. And it all started in little sharecroppers' cabins in downtown Raleigh. You are listening to our state magazine on the North Carolina Reading Service. If you have any comments or questions, please call the studios 919-832-5138. And now, hidden treasures of our universities. North Carolina's universities are the stewards of some very special items. Doc Watson's first recording, the desk Virginia Woolf used to redefine the novel, and Alicia Mitchell's pocket watch are just some of the cherished pieces that teach us about our state's history and the people who preserved it, written by Chloe Klingstead. We start at UNC Greensboro with Miles Davis's trumpet. I imagine he had more than one in his life, but let's read about this one. The trumpet in a glass case in Two, that's T-E-W, Recital Hall, started out as a loan. In the late 90s, Arthur Buddy Gist, a businessman and entrepreneur, would let students play it as he told stories about his friends, jazz legend Miles Davis, Cannonball Adderley, and John Coltrane. When Gist formally donated the trumpet, given to him by Davis, to the University of North Carolina at Greensboro on September 27, 2001, it seemed almost too unbelievable to be true, says Steve Haynes, interim director of the Miles Davis Jazz Studies Program. After undergoing a thorough vetting process, the trumpet was confirmed to be the same one that Davis played while recording Kind of Blue, the best-selling jazz album of all time. I'm really glad that Gist had the wisdom to put the trumpet in a place where everybody can go and see and enjoy it, Haynes says. There's a picture here of Miles Davis playing the trumpet, and it says the photos in Kind of Blue's liner notes were blown up and used to confirm that the serial number on Davis's trumpet matched the one at UNCG. There is a double-page spread of the trumpet. This trumpet has seen a lot of use. It's not beaten up in the sense that it doesn't have any dents in it or anything, but the coating on the outside of the trumpet, and I used to own one, so I'm familiar with this problem, is quite, I don't want to say stained, but worn away. So there's no luster on a lot of the sections there because of the handling of the trumpet over the years. Lots and lots of I don't know what you'd call it. It's not tarnish exactly, but the spots have been, the nice coating on the outside is worn away, and it's almost like a rust, but it's a gold color, just like the brass finish of the trumpet. How about UNC Chapel Hill, the Dean Smith collection? Most of the materials in the Dean Smith collection, about 12,000 items, are from the legendary basketball coach's early life, a school report on his hometown, Emporia, Kansas. He got an A, of course. Books that show his interest in coaching, and even scrapbooks that his parents put together of his wins and successes, which they continued to do well into Smith's adult years. Smith's estate donated the items in 2017. So here at the top, we have, you know, those covers, they're made of a thin, sort of a cardboard or a very heavy paper, and they're a little impressed, and they're different colors, and then there's a front and a back, and they're connected by a long metal band, which goes through holes in the paper, and then you fold them over and zip it up into one document. That's what this is. And the front page is open. It says, Facts, Figures, and Pictures of Emporia, Kansas, compiled by Dean Smith, published by the Smith Publishing Company, Emporia, Kansas. Graded 5/20/46 with a great big red A to match the red cover, I guess. And down at the bottom, a telegram. In fact, today, of course, kids don't know what a telegram is, but it says up in the upper left-hand corner, American Telegram, the Telegram Company. And it says, Coach Dean Smith, UNC Basketball Office, Smith Center, Bowles Drive, Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Congratulations. Ditto for Final Four. I've been glued to TV. May want tickets to playoff. Look forward to golfing with you this summer. Signed, Michael. Many personal correspondences, like Michael Jordan's March 24, 1997 telegram to Smith, are part of UNC Dean Smith collection. Ironically, it's clear that Smith was a private person, says Biff Hollingsworth, collecting and public programming archivist. There's a picture here of Michael Jordan and Dean Smith. It looks like Michael's kissing him on the head. He's either doing that or whispering a little bit above his ear. We can't be sure. And then, on the right-hand side, Elisha Mitchell's pocket watch. Elisha Mitchell was a determined man. In 1857, the UNC professor of geology, mineralogy, and chemistry made a fourth attempt to confirm the elevation of a peak in the Black Mountains. Mitchell believed that this peak was the highest point east of the Mississippi River. While hiking alone, he fell from a cliff above a 40-foot waterfall and drowned. On that fateful journey, Mitchell carried a silver-plated pocket watch that stopped at 8:19 on June 27th, 1857, presumably the exact moment he died. The mountain was eventually confirmed to be the tallest peak in the eastern United States and named, you got it, Mount Mitchell. Linda Jacobson, keeper of the UNC Collection Gallery, says that Elisha Mitchell's pocket watch is a monument to perseverance. Mitchell's great grandson donated the watch to UNC in 1929. It, of course, has Roman numerals on a cream-colored or very faded white background. They're all in pretty good condition, and there's a second hand on this watch also. Andy Griffith papers. About 15 years ago, on a trip to UNC, Andy Griffith spontaneously broke into song, "You get a line and I'll get a pole, honey." Griffith serenaded UNC staff with the Crawdad song, a tune he often sang on the Andy Griffith Show, before donating his signature Martin & Company guitar and a collection of his film and television work to his alma mater. On the right-hand side, in a small picture here, it says the Flaming Lazy Boy. The fiery recliner that graced the cover of Southern Culture on the Skid's second studio album was donated to UNC in 2014 by Rick Miller, the band's frontman for an exhibit. Stephen Weiss, curator of the Southern Folklore Collection, says that it's very comfortable. Moving on to North Carolina State University in Raleigh. First modern electric guitar. William Sidney Wilson, an electrical engineering student, won first place at at North Carolina State's 1940 engineering fair for designing what may be the world's first modern electric guitar with a pickup for each string. The pickups meant that Wilson could amplify sound without the hollow body structure of an acoustic guitar. Doesn't look like a guitar I've ever seen. It's just like a strip of wood with a, and at one end is the area where the top end is where the strings attach, and so it's a little wider up there, and then it is literally screwed onto a wider piece of wood down below, which is about half the length of the area that the string, most of the strings cover, and it goes into something which looks like a metal base. And the whole thing is pretty rusty and rustic. Phil Freelon papers. Architect Phil Freelon may be best known for his contributions to the design of the National Museum of African American History and Culture in Washington, D.C. But his work stands throughout the triangle, too. The 1975 North Carolina State graduate designed the Durham Bulls Athletic Park and the Lake Johnson Boathouse in Raleigh, and they're pictured up here in the middle of the page as models. Among the other facilities, in 2015, 4 years before Freelon died from ALS, he donated drawings, project files, and five architectural models to North Carolina State Library's Special Collections. Gwynne Thayer, interim department head of the Special Collections Research Center, says that Freelon used his diagnosis to help others. He tried to think about access for people with physical differences, Thayer says. That's the kind of person he was. And here's a picture of him, photographed in 2017 for Our State magazine. And at the bottom of the page, knitted aorta. William Edward Shin, a professor of textiles at North Carolina State, developed the first knitted artery for use in the human body in 1955. The artificial aorta, the primary artery in the heart, was made out of polyester fabric using a machine that typically knitted men's ties. Years later, in the 70s, the dean of the College of Textiles had his aorta replaced using Shin's technology. The knitted aorta is an early example of North Carolina State's think and do model, Thayer said. What is exciting about it is its stem in action. Moving westward, Wake Forest University in Winston-Salem. Philo Mathesian Society banner. Tanya Zanish Belcher, senior librarian and director of special collections and archives, was fairly new to Wake Forest University's Z. Smith Reynolds Library in 2014 when she found a battered bundle of painted silk wrapped in butcher paper, deteriorating on a shelf. A year later, with the help of some fundraising, the library hired textile conservator Claudia Walpole, who deduced that the banner was painted in 1850 1857 by David Bustle Bowser, a prominent black artist who painted portraits of President Abraham Lincoln and abolitionist John Brown. Wake Forest Philomathesian Literary Society would display the banner to distinguish themselves as they debated historical, political, and philosophical issues of the day, like slavery. Zanish Belcher says that Wake Forest is lucky to have a piece by such an interesting and talented artist. I think it's my favorite architect that we have. It's a little hard to describe, and that may be because parts of it are missing. I'm not sure. It says, librarian Tanya Zanish Belcher believes that a complete restoration of Wake Forest 1857 banner would cost about $100,000. So what we have is a pole at the top, which is used to mount it, and there are some straps going around the pole and connected to this banner, which is a tan color. And around the edge, there is a belting, the word is escaping me, what you call it, around the edge of a rug or whatever, and frilly strings are hanging away from that, like you might find on an oriental rug at your house. And so that goes all the way around on four sides. And then there appears to be a circle made out of painted, I don't exactly know what you'd call them. It's kind of like a flower that hasn't opened. You can see the three or four points at the tip, but it's in tightly, and then it goes down to a stem which has a couple of buds hanging off of it, and then it goes right into the next flower. So it kind of goes around. I guess you call those sheaths, or wheat sheaths. That's what I'm looking for. And then at the top, there's a hand, just a hand, with a cuff around it, and it is holding on to something which leads down in some chains and goes into a metal pot which says Centrum on it. And then below that, things start to get really hairy, because whatever was in the middle of the banner is now pretty much gone, and you can't make out what it was. It was some kind of a seal down there, because it's round and has similar edgings, but you can't tell what the edgings are anymore. And in the center, there's something which looks like a caduceus, and there's some gray pieces of fabric, and I see the letter of A at the bottom, etc. So it's really hard to tell what that is. There's another item here about the Nuremberg Chronicle. Zanish Belcher often allows freshmen to touch the pages of the college's Nuremberg Chronicle. There's no point in having it if our students can't use it, she says. Printed in 1493, one of about 700 copies in existence, handmade paper and wood illustrations are a demonstration of early printing history. And that is about all we have time for in today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired, and Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Questions, comments, call the studios, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.